to Straight Talk with MJ. I'm your host, Michelle Jeanette, and today I am going to go there. What does that mean, going there? Well, we're going to cover some things that maybe we're not really good at talking about or discussing because of one reason or another, and we'll discuss why. You're probably confused now. Don't worry. I'm going to lay it out here. But first, I'm going to talk a little bit, obviously, about some history. I always incorporate American history, things that our founders did or said about our country that is relevant for today. And I'm also going to bring up some issues. That's why I'm going to go there. Today, I'm going there with issues about the different candidates, what our options are for this year, for this year's election. And they're very, very different, stark contrast of our options to pick from this year. And that's why it's very important that I bring that to you on the go. This is the format. My goal is a format for on the go to listen to. If you're working, you've got kids, you don't have time to sit down and dig through all the news and all the articles. And so I do that. I'm going to do that for you. I'm going to bring you the best that I can for knowledge and for truth. And that's what my goal is here. So hopefully you'll join me. It's going to be interesting. And it's kind of eye-opening to me, the stuff, you know, the stuff that I've been researching. It's very eye-opening to what our future can be if we vote correctly, and what it can be if we don't vote to stand up for American values and American Constitution. So it's extremely important. So that's why, especially here in just a little over a week, week and a half, is Super Tuesday. And many of us in 14 states will be going to the polls to vote in the primaries for the president and the presidential primaries. So it's extremely important that I get this information out to you because we need to know who the people are who we're voting for, okay? So I'm going to just start off today with some quotes from our founding fathers and different people in our history. And one of them is Abigail Adams, and she was the wife of John Adams, who was one of the founders of this country and was our second president. And she wrote to a friend, and this is regarding Christianity, morals, religion, that kind of thing. And she wrote to a friend in 1775, and she said, "A patriot without religion, in my estimation, is as great a paradox as an honest man without the fear of God. Is it possible that he whom no moral obligations bind can have any real goodwill towards men? Can he be a patriot who, by an openly vicious conduct, is undermining the very bonds of society? The scripture tells us, righteousness exalteth a nation." So she's just saying we have to stick with the roots of that there is a creator. That's why the founders acknowledge that, three to four times just in the Declaration of Independence and in our Constitution, let alone in all the different writings and subsequent papers, the Federalist Papers and all that that we have to back that up. And there was a Supreme Court justice named David Brewer, and he lived in 1837 to 1910. And he was quoted as saying this on the Fundamental Orders of Connecticut. So it was like the Charter of Connecticut established in 1638. And this is what he said, that the Charter said, "And well knowing where a people are gathered together, the Word of God requires that to maintain the peace and union, there should be an orderly and decent government established according to God, to maintain and preserve the liberty and purity of the gospel of our Lord Jesus, which we now profess, of the said gospel which is now practiced amongst us. And then he went on to quote William Penn in the Charter of the Province of Pennsylvania in 1701. So this was before the Revolutionary War. No people can be truly happy, though under the greatest enjoyment of civil liberties, if abridged of their religious profession and worship. And the Declaration of Independence recognizes the presence of the divine in human affairs. The courts decided also in a case called Updegraff versus the Commonwealth, and this was in their decision, it is quoted saying, Christianity, general Christianity, is and always has been a part of the common law. Not Christianity with an established church, but Christianity with liberty of conscience to all men. And then he ends saying this, we find everywhere a clear recognition of the same truth. The happiness of people and the good order and preservation of civil government essentially depend upon piety, religion, and morality. Religion, morality, and knowledge are necessary to good government, the preservation of liberty, and the happiness of mankind. So he's saying a people, you know, a knowledgeable people, an educated people in morality and in the basis of religion, or the relationship as Christians, it would be a relationship with God. But this is what they called it, the religion and morality and knowledge. If we don't have that, this republic, this constitutional republic, doesn't work, okay? And so we are the last best place for freedom anywhere. And so it's very important as Christians that we understand our duty, our goal as Christians. And I was reading on the American Association of Evangelicals website, and they have a booklet out, and it's very informative. It's very short, but very informative. And I'll put the link to that on my page because everyone should read through this, but I'm going to highlight some of this out of their booklet. It's called Seven Your Duties as a Christian Citizen. Seven of your duties. Your seven duties as a Christian citizen. Sorry. Your seven duties as a Christian citizen. So I'm going to go through that really quick. This is written by Bill Bright and Brad Bright. And the first duty, this is very, very well said. It says, citizenship in a free country is a blessing from God. Our great system of self-government assures every Christian an opportunity to have a voice in the affairs of the nation. It allows us to say by our actions, may your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So just as in the church and in the home, God wants us to do his will in government. America is faced with the greatest crisis in its history. We are in danger of losing our nation and our God-given freedoms to those who disdain the God of our nation's founders. And if you step back and look at everything you're seeing in the media and coming from the different candidates, especially the Democrat platform, who in 2012 voted God out of their platform, and they had to take a vote on that, and how just recently, in the last couple weeks, or not too long ago, they are trying to take out the so help me God part of the oath when you take your oath of office. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. But when you say so help me God, it's really what it's doing is it's putting you not just accountable to the people, but you're saying you're doing your duty accountable to God. Okay, so that's even a higher form than just our man-made government. So it's kind of disconcerting and kind of eye-opening to know that they want to take that out, amongst other things that they are trying to do to take religion and God out of everything. So back to this booklet, it says, if we're in danger of losing our nation. And if that should happen, our opportunity to help fulfill the Great Commission throughout the U.S. and the world could be lost. Hundreds of millions may never have an opportunity to hear from our Savior. And a British statesman, Edmund Burke, said, "All that is necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing." In other words, if you are not part of the solution, you are part of the problem. America, like I said, is one of the last strongholds of freedom on earth, and citizens who are dedicated to God are the primary resource for the preservation of our freedoms, including the freedom to serve Him. Our founding fathers began the Bill of Rights guaranteeing freedom of religion for this very reason, because it's the only sure basis for all our other freedoms. And in my opinion, not just the First Amendment, but the Second Amendment also ensures that government from within, not just from without, cannot impose their tyranny on the people, on the citizens, because, you know, it's our duty. It's, you know, we have that moral, that God-given right of self-preservation and to fight tyranny and evil. And that's enshrined in our Second Amendment. So, they go on to talk about the seven different things, God's plan for a nation's leadership, and to protect His people, God warns against ungodly leaders. The rule of the wicked is a direct violation of His will. The wicked, in Psalm 125:3, it says, "The wicked will not rule the land of the godly, for then the godly might be tempted to do wrong." Instead, God's plan is for us to have leaders who know Him and will rule according to His word. In 2 Samuel 23, He says, "He who rules over men must be just, ruling in the fear of God." And John Jay, our very first Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, was one of the three men most responsible for drafting the Constitution. He writes this in 1816, "Providence has given to our people the choice of their rulers, and it is the duty, as well as the privilege and interest, of our Christian nation to select and prefer Christians for their rulers." So, the seven duties. The first one is, as Christians, the Christian lawyer Michael Whitehead put it this way: if America is to be saved, saved Americans must lead the way. And the number one thing we can do, we hear this a lot, is to pray. And of course, we hear a lot of 2 Chronicles 7:14, "If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, I will hear from heaven and forgive their sins and restore the land." We have to pray. So that's the number one thing that as Christians we can be doing. Pray daily for our leadership. Even as, you know, I have to confess, I didn't do that as much in the past as I should have. And so we have to pray daily for the men and women of God, that godly or moral leaders will be elected to public office at all levels of government. And it starts with the local. It starts with the local, then the state, and then the national. And it, you know, Psalm says, "Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord." So the first thing, obviously, is to pray. And there's a lot of different resources online. One of my favorites is Intercessors for America, IFA. And they have a website that has a daily email that you can do and use to pray for different people. It's very good. I'll put that on my web page for today. The second thing is obvious, is register to vote. And with Super Tuesday coming up in 14 states, and then, of course, all the other states are different dates. I don't know all of them right offhand, but I live in Tennessee, and so we're part of Super Tuesday on March 3rd. Register to vote. So right now, the time has passed for the March 3rd election day to register to vote. Now, if you have registered, early voting is now, and then of course, you can go on election day, March 3rd, to vote. but we have to register to vote. And the numbers are various, but in the last election in 2016, it was only because the evangelicals got out and voted that we, and prayed, the first two things, register to vote, and the next one is to vote, become informed, is because that's how Trump got elected, because we saw what could have, where America was going, and we prayed and we acted. We didn't just pray, but we acted. So registering to vote is extremely important. And King Solomon in Proverbs 11 says, upright citizens are good for a city, a state, or nation, and they make it prosper. So if you're not registered and you're not involved, how are we supposed to influence our leaders for godliness and righteousness if we're not at least registering to vote and voting, the two basic things, as a privilege? So we've already passed that deadline here, but you can, if you are registered to vote, you can go ahead and vote in the primaries. So this is just the primaries coming up. Number three is become informed, and that's kind of what my goal is to bring you the information on different candidates, and I have a whole slew of information on different ones, and it's just way too much for one episode of a podcast, but I'm going to maybe bring that in several different episodes, and that way we can be informed, because we have to be educated and informed. And you know, Matthew 10, Jesus said we are to be shrewd, which is wise with street smarts, as we go out and engage society. So do you think it's possible to be shrewd as snakes, quote unquote, as Jesus commanded, if you are not well informed? So we have to get informed. We can't just say, which is a lot of us. A lot of us are like, this politics is just so frustrating. It just makes me angry. All the bitterness and hatred. There's so much hate and so much lies. So many lies coming out of all these different media outlets. And so you don't know who to believe. So you just turn everything off and you don't even want to get involved because it's too frustrating. So that's, again, that's why I'm here. I want to bring that, hopefully bring that information to you where it's, I dig for it. I try to bring you the truth and correct information and good information so you can make informed decisions. And so hopefully that helps. But, you know, number three is very important. We have to become informed. And we have to know what the candidates, what their views are. And so we have, you know, we really do need to make every effort to obtain reliable information, which again is extremely hard in today's media outlets and all the disinformation and agenda-driven news stories that they put out there. So it's, you know, one way we can do that is if a candidate is running for re-election, you can go to heritage.org, and they have a website for a scorecard, and they, based on conservative values, they will rank all the different senators and the congressmen in Congress and how they voted, and it'll show you how they voted versus how a conservative viewpoint worldview would vote on different issues. It's very, very good and helpful. And I know there's other sites for maybe more local and state representatives, and but I will put the Heritage link on today's podcast so that you can look up your senator and congressman to see how they voted. And that's very helpful to know, do we want to reelect them or not? So, and then also there's a lot of new candidates coming up that have never been in politics. So how do you know who, you know, like how they're going to vote? And the only thing you can do is just do your homework and find out maybe some more history about them, what kind of business they were in. You know, I've brought two interviews with two guys that are going to be possibly running to replace our retiring Representative Phil Rowe here in East Tennessee. And neither one, well, one of them has been involved in state politics as far as a representative. And then another one, Todd McKinley, he, you know, is a veteran. And Timothy Hill is our local representative from East Tennessee that's at the state level. And, you know, Todd McKinley has done some work for a previous president and in and out of the White House doing stuff there now. But, you know, as far as a national level of what they voted for, you just have to go with, you know, their history and see how they've have voted maybe locally, like Timothy Hill. You can see how he's voted, and he's been very conservative. So that kind of thing, you just have to get in there and do your homework. But it needs to get done. And so again, that's why I'm bringing this to you, and I'll put that link with the Heritage Scorecard thing in there. And very important, knowledge you can learn, but you got to act on it. So knowledge without action is useless. So, and as far as getting informed, that goes to number four, which is help elect moral or godly people as much as you can. Now, they're not always going to be out there running in your section or your district or whatever, but do you the homework for your local people. Find out who they are and do they stand on biblical values. Okay, and today that's even getting watered down. What are biblical values? You know, that's changing. The progressive left has infiltrated the Christian church and is changing what biblical values mean in many areas, especially where it comes to marriage, the redefinition of what marriage is. Should the government even be involved in that? I mean, that's a whole other issue that we can talk about. But righteous rule brings rejoicing. That's what Proverbs 29 says. When the godly are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked are in power, they groan. So, we have to look at our candidate again of how they, what they stand on, their basic qualifications. Are they capable? Are they men who fear God? They hate bribes. You know, who are they appointing as leaders? And that, you know, that kind of thing. So obviously local is what you can know about and more than I can. I don't know everybody's locals, but we can talk more about the national. So obviously helped elect righteous or godly people. And your key role is obviously at the precinct level. At your local level, God's people can and must serve as much as they can at the precinct and local levels as a high priority and duty for just making sure that the godly are in charge. So we'll have, you will rejoice, like Proverbs says. So the fifth thing, obviously, is to go vote. Just go vote. If you fail to vote consciously for godly rule, evil will increase in our nation. When the wicked are in authority, sin flourishes, as Proverbs 29 says. Our nation will then bear the consequences of the leaders we choose. So we saw the decline of many things in the last 8 years of the previous administration, and even it started before that. But it was accelerated during that time, and we had just so much. We had economic decline. We had just the idea that we don't protect or support the first responders, the police, the military was degraded. It was shrunk. It was more the moral thought, morality of the thinking of the military was just so down and low. They had been on so many deployments with extended wars. It's never ending. And so it's other things, just thing after thing. It was just going down, down, down. And it was even to the point where they were, the previous president was apologizing around the world for America, which if you really, truly understood what America does to hold everything, hold the tyrants back, to hold the chaos back, to ensure safe travel passage through the waterways around the world, and that there's not more piracy of that kind of thing. I mean, just simple little things like that that America does. It's crazy. But anyway, if you know, we have to choose and vote for godly, you know, godly people, as, and not everybody's going to be Christian, obviously, but what do they stand for? What are their core principles? You know, are they in line with the Constitution, or are they trying to change the Constitution? And it's pretty obvious if you understand the Constitution, which, again, we go back to education, and not many people do nowadays. So that's another reason why I'm here, why I want to always bring history into this, into the mix, because it's important to understand. If you choose not to vote, you forfeit your moral right to decry the ungodly actions of your elected leaders. By not voting, you helped elect them. You bear the blame, and your children and grandchildren will suffer for it, so you must always vote. And vote as wisely as possible so that your conscience is clear before God. Only then can you be part of the solution. So it says it's commonly believed that elections in America are decided by a majority of the people, but it's really elections are decided by a majority of those who vote. So I know in several swing states in the 2016 election, Trump won by fewer than 100,000 votes, even fewer than 20,000 votes in a couple of the states. So every vote counts. Even way back in the 2000 presidential election, Florida was decided by 537 votes, okay? And that was after a recount. So, yes, your vote matters. So you go out there and, you know, we have to be guided. How do we know who we vote for? We just have to be guided by God's word. Godliness makes a nation great. So pray about it and get informed. That's why I'm trying to help you be informed and really get in there. And what are the principles of this person? What are their values? And this is interesting. In 1832, one of the founding fathers, Noah Webster, which we get the Webster's Dictionary from, he warned young people that the preservation of our government depends on their choosing righteous leaders. Here's what he said. When you become entitled to exercise the right of voting for public officers, let it be impressed on your mind that God commands you to choose for rulers just men who will rule in the fear of God. The preservation of a republican government depends on the faithful discharge of this duty. If the citizens neglect their duty and place unprincipled men in office, the government will soon be corrupted. Laws will be made not for the public good so much as for selfish or local purposes. Corrupt or incompetent men will be appointed to execute the laws, and the public revenues will be squandered on unworthy men, and the rights of the citizens will be violated or discarded. If a Republican government fails to secure public prosperity and happiness, it must be because the citizens neglect the divine commands and elect bad men to make and administer the laws. So, I hope this is encouraging you and hopefully to get you up and out and informed and to vote. And after election day, it just, you don't just throw it away. You keep yourself informed. You keep going. You don't stop after election day, because you can impact your leaders even after election. And a big way is just to keep informed on maybe local bills, things, legislation that is going on in your state, and call, show up. Write letters, do emails. I do a lot of phone calling to my representatives. If there's something coming up that I don't like or I do like, even if it's a positive, you say, yes, vote for this, or no, don't vote for this. Look at Virginia. They're a prime example of when we kind of let down in the off-presidential years, that we don't get out and vote on that next election. So the midterms, it's historical. We just don't get out there and we're not as enthused, but we have to be. And you saw what happened. Republicans, I don't always like what Republicans do, but we lost the House and it has been a tremendous negative impact because we lost it and we didn't get out and finish voting. In Virginia, they saw the same thing. They flipped blue for the first time in several decades, and man, that governor and those Democrat legislators are gung-ho, full force, steam ahead to pass legislation that is infringing on our First and Second Amendment rights. And I'll talk more about that, because it's not just about the Second Amendment rights. It's about our freedom of religion that they are trying to squash in Virginia and other places. So if you can't just vote and then that's it. You have to be involved. You have to be informed and keep up with your legislatures. And you only can donate to them, that kind of thing. And so we have to make God the seventh way we do this is we make God the issue. Okay, our individual view of God determines whether we believe in our God-given rights and our God-given freedoms, or whether we demand my rights, my freedoms. So your view of God is the cause and everything else is a symptom. So even your worldview is a symptom of your view of God. So we kind of have to understand who God is and what our responsibility is with him in order to vote properly. When America was founded in 1776, an American citizen heard an average of 3,000 sermons over the course of a lifetime regarding personal accountability to God and responsibility for our fellow man. As Jesus said, we are to love God and love our neighbor in Matthew 22. As a result, in the 18th century, if a man's barn burned down, his neighbors viewed it as their personal responsibility to help rebuild it. When the farmer down the road was sick during the harvest, they helped bring in the harvest. This was even the driving motivation for the abolitionist movement in the 19th century. On the other hand, if a man was lazy, he was offered a job, not a handout. And if a student failed a class, he repeated it until he earned a passing grade. If a reporter lied, he was fired on the first offense. So when most members of society believe they are accountable to God and responsible for their fellow man, the free market system works well because we don't leave people behind in our communities. We hold each other accountable and show compassion to those who truly, truly need it. But we have not been doing that lately. And the bottom line is, if we teach children that God is irrelevant, like our public schools do today, they will act like it. If the core problem in society truly is how we see God, then the solution is very obvious. The only credible answer is for us to help our neighbors to better understand who God is and why it matters. It is not a quick fix. It will take time. The local pastor cannot do it alone. We can't just go to church, sit in the pew, and expect our pastor to influence and change society. No, that's our job. We go to church to get recharged, to get encouraged and challenged to go out there and live. And I love how our church says where faith and life collide. You know, our faith collides with life, and we get out there and we influence our little oikos, our world that's around us. Because the preacher can't reach people that are, you know, maybe today with some video live streaming and stuff, but not on a personal level. And that's how we influence people, is on a personal level. So, you know, the local pastor can't do it alone. We have to be and walk out and be the church and be the voice. It's not our pastor's responsibility to help our neighbor understand God better. It's ours. So that's why God put us in communities and in nations. So we can be part of the solution. So don't give up. Fix your view on God. And when the signers of the Declaration of Independence affixed their signatures to that historic document, they were very well aware that if the colonial cause failed, they would be executed as traitors. They were that dedicated to the cause of freedom because they believed they were accountable to God and responsible for their fellow man. Any less dedication on our part will result in a loss of that precious freedom for which they and thousands of others were willing to die. We dare not fail them, ourselves, and far more importantly, our Lord, to whom this nation was dedicated. America is now faced with its greatest crisis in history. If you consider yourself a follower of Jesus and care about your country, now is the time to act. That is the bottom line. And here in a minute, I'm going to explain a little bit of what we're fighting against because we have to know what we're fighting against, not just what we are fighting for. We can say we're for, you know, for pro-life, pro-Bible, pro-God. That's great because that's what we stand for. But the scripture does tell us we fight against evil. And we have to know what it is. We have to recognize it as to what it is so we'll know how to fight it. But it starts with knowing your values, knowing what you stand for, knowing what you're fighting for. And that way you can know and also see what you're fighting against, because maybe that will help motivate you to see what we're up against. And in real terms, maybe that will motivate you to really step up and do something, at least vote. So we're going to talk about that. Okay, we talked about our 7 civic duties as Christians and what we should do. So what I want to do now is lay out the differences in our candidates and explain some of their issues, the issues and where they stand on them, so that we can be real clear about who we're voting for and what will happen if they're put into office. And so the first thing I'm going to do is let you listen to 2 clips of 2 of the candidates. The leading candidates right now would be Bernie Sanders and Mike Bloomberg. And so I want you to hear this because we're going to talk about this first subject that is important, which is the issue of guns and our Second Amendment rights. So listen to their stand on this.
I am very proud that today I have a D-minus voting record from the NRA. And under my administration, it will be the American people doing gun policy, not dictated by the NRA. But to answer your question, the world has changed and my views have changed. And my view is right now, we need universal background checks, we end the gun show loophole, we end the so-called straw man provision, we make certain that we end the sale and distribution of assault weapons in this country.
All I want to do is have the requirement that there's a federal law that says gun stores can't sell to minors, to people with psychiatric problems, or people with criminal records. That law should apply to sales from on the internet and also at gun shows. All we want to do. Nobody wants to take away anybody's guns.
Okay, where do I start on this? The first thing, gun control issue can be boiled down to one statement, in my opinion. An armed man is a citizen. An unarmed man is a subject, a victim, and a target. So our founders knew from personal experience how just very important it is to have an armed citizenry. They enshrined our natural and God-given right of self-preservation in our Second Amendment, and this is what it says. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state and the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. And I went to Britannica Encyclopedia, and it said this: in addition to checking federal power, the Second Amendment also provided state governments with the last coup de grace that would enable the states to thwart and oppose the general government in case of tyranny. And last, it enshrined the ancient Florentine and Roman constitutional principle of civil and military virtue by making every citizen a soldier and every soldier a citizen. So this, they like to say, we're not coming for your guns. You heard Mayor Bloomberg say, we're not coming for your guns. We don't want to take them away. That's always been their backup statement. But it's very clear that they say one thing and they're actually doing another, because in Virginia is a prime example. Mayor Bloomberg and his group, Every Town for Gun Safety, put $2.5 million into Virginia's elections last year and pushed the Democrats over the top to give them full state control for the first time since 1994. And now that the Dems have control, they're on a march to implement extreme legislation while they can, including gun control measures that seriously subvert the Constitution. We cannot be complacent. Elections have consequences. What they say sounds good on the surface, but it's not really what is going on. And the truth of it, for instance, you know, they always make the NRA the bad guy. Well, let me give you just a little bit of history of what the NRA is really about. And the NRA is made up of millions of members. Okay, millions of members. We become members, including myself, and because they are all about education. Education, and safety. And they're always trying to blame the NRA for having congressmen in their back pocket, where it's actually the other way, kind of different. We're promoting people who stand for the Second Amendment, constitutional rights, safety, education, that kind of thing. So a brief history of the NRA, and this is very interesting if you didn't know this. But it started in 1871. Okay, that's how long they've been around. And Union veterans, a Colonel Church and a General Wingate, formed the NRA. And the primary goal of the association was to promote and encourage rifle shooting on a scientific basis. And they were granted a charter in New York in 1871. And Civil War General Ambrose Burnside, who was also the former governor of Rhode Island and a U.S. senator, became the first president of the NRA. They actually came up against some opposition in New York, and because they were establishing a firing rifle range for where people could practice and get better at shooting, because they saw that they were dismayed. This came about because they were dismayed by the lack of marksmanship shown by their troops in the Civil War, okay, because people didn't know how to shoot their guns. So political opposition to the promotion of marksmanship in New York forced the NRA to find a new home, and so in 1892, they moved to New Jersey. And so they promoted shooting sports among the youth. That began in 1903. And by 1906, the NRA's youth program was in full swing, and more than 200 boys were competing in matches and competition. So today's youth programs are still a cornerstone of the NRA. They're all about educating. So you're not afraid, you're not ignorant, and you can be more careful, and you don't think it's a toy, okay? So it's education is a cornerstone of that this organization. And with more than 1 million youth participating in NRA shooting sports events, and with groups such as the 4-H, American Legion, Royal Rangers, even the Boy Scouts, National High School Rodeo, and others. And so due to the overwhelming growth of their shooting programs, a new range was needed. And so they, General Critchfield of Ohio had begun construction of a new facility in Lake Erie. And so that became the home of the national matches. And nearly 6,000 people competing annually with pistol, small bore, and high power events. The national matches became one of the biggest sporting events held and still held in the country today. Today they have over, I think it's upwards of 5 million members, and they are all about education. So with that said, you know, they're always trying to make the NRA the bad guy. Well, their singular mission is to protection of kids. And this is what you hear all the time. You hear that the NRA doesn't want to protect kids. But they actually have a solution. It's called the NRA School Shield Program. And it's committed to addressing the many facets of school security, including best practices in security infrastructure, technology, personnel, training, and policy. And they seek to engage communities and empower leaders to help make our schools more secure. And this program, what they do is their security experts come in free of charge. They donate all their expertise and time to make schools more secure. And they come in and train the teachers. They train the school leaders. They even train the security officers, whatever it is. They come in and train for free on school safety and help with that. So their goal, their core cornerstone is educating the public. Education, starting with kids. I know my kids went and they taught hunting safety classes in school, which they've done for generation here in the U.S., and they teach kids safety. And they teach them how to correctly handle a shotgun, a hunting rifle. I think it was a shotgun with my son. And I may be wrong on that, but I believe it was a shotgun. And so they get a hunting safety class, and they have to pass the class. And they get a little certificate thing that they've passed this class. And so they know how to handle a gun. So the NRA is not the bad guy in all this. But the Democrat candidates and the Democrat leaders want to make the NRA the bad guy because that's just somebody they can go after. They want to do that. But the NRA is really individuals. It's individual people as part of an organization that promote education and safety. And so that's the truth about the NRA and what they do. The other thing is they like to talk about background checks and which we already have. And that did not stop the shooter in Texas. And you heard if you go back and listen to my interview with Katie with Good Patriot, she talked to the two men who stopped the shooters at the two churches in Texas. And she, you know, they were talking about the first guy in, I can't remember the name of the town right off the top of my head, but Sutherland Springs, I believe it was. He had the gun illegally. And even though because he passed a background check, and the reason why is because the Air Force did not report his criminal activity to that system. And so they didn't know he was a criminal, abusive, and should not have a gun. And so the system is there, the background check system is there, but you have to be able to get the right information. It has to be put into the system so that you know. And so there already are laws that punish straw man, if you want to call it straw man purchases. They already have laws that do that. There are already things on the books, and they want to keep saying that we don't have that, but we do. And then they say, you know, we want to ban assault weapons, but they don't want to define what an assault weapon is. An assault weapon is could be, I mean, look in London. They took away guns, and so what do they use now? Knives. I know they're going to have to take away knives. I mean, assault weapon is what you use, the tool that you use to assault somebody. So you can't define assault weapon so broadly. It's just not, it doesn't work that way. But that's how they're trying to push it. And you saw in Virginia, at least in Virginia, for at least this year, they did not get that part of the bill passed where they gonna ban assault weapons. They need to define that. And at least for this year, some of the Democrats came to their senses and didn't pass that part of the bill. But they are doing other things. I mean, they're so extreme. They're actually talking about, I mean, if you didn't hear it, here's what they were talking about. Maybe using the National Guard to go and round up all the guns, because overnight, just by the passing of an unconstitutional law, it's going to make law-abiding citizens illegally owners of illegal guns, just overnight. So they're going to become criminals by the passage of an unconstitutional law. And so that's just not, you have to be aware of this, okay? This is a very important issue that most of all the Democratic candidates are saying that they're for, which is this more gun control. And unfortunately, all of us, we do not want kids, you know, we care about the safety of kids. But this is not how you protect kids. You don't go after the law-abiding citizen. You enforce the laws we have, and you go and you go after the criminals. Okay, so there's so many stats that I can go down the list, and it would take, you know, hours to go through all the stats that show that because we have more guns doesn't mean we have more crime. It actually is the opposite. And I can list all the statistics on that. But of course, I don't have time to do that today. So the real bottom line is elections have consequences. And this is one of those things, these issues that if we aren't careful, like in Virginia, and they talk a good talk, that, you know, we're going to have the consequence of this election. And if we elect somebody from the Democratic side, unfortunately, that is what they're going to pursue a number one. Okay, even Elizabeth Warren has said this. Mayor Pete has said this. They even though they talk, we're not coming for your guns, that is not true. This is what they're doing. And Mayor Bloomberg has, he put the $2.5 million into Virginia, and now he's going to Texas. He's trying to flip Texas. He's got at least $8 million he's putting into advertising and trying to flip seats there, to push this, because he makes a good argument. He sounds good, but that's not really what he's doing. So actions can speak louder than words sometimes. And in this case, it's definitely true. So I know guns are obviously, the Second Amendment's a huge issue to a lot of conservatives and to Christian conservatives. I spoke about this in a previous episode, and go back and listen to, I believe it was my interview with Katie from Good Patriot. We talked about the biblical stance that we can take for that self-preservation. But I haven't really even covered the attacks against our basic First Amendment religious freedoms and the Christian beliefs and values that are the foundation of Western civilization and beliefs that are the backbone of our very Constitution. Our beliefs in God, biblical marriage, families, and the value of life and liberty. And I know I'm running out of time for today, but the last thing I want to say for today, and I'm going to come back with another episode on a couple other issues that are extremely important, especially this week as we head into the primaries, starting at least here, Super Tuesday next week. And so the last thing I want to say today is something interesting that I found out that progressive Christians are pursuing. And so in a Charisma magazine article with Stephen Strang, he said that, and I didn't know this, but this is kind of eye-opening, that Barack Obama is leading a shadow party funded by leftist radicals such as George Soros and trying to impose their socialist will on the nation, and the mainstream media has said little or nothing about it, obviously, because we, if you know, they pushed that agenda themselves. There's a new movement led by Doug Padgett. It's called Vote Common Good. And he's a, what they call a maverick evangelical preacher from Minnesota. And Padgett started Vote Common Good. He started a nationwide bus tour that is aimed at convincing religiously motivated voters to cast their ballots for whoever the eventual Democratic candidate will be. Whoever it is. He just wants people to vote against Trump. He works also with the group called Sojourners, which is partly funded by the billionaire George Soros. So I've did some research on Sojourners, and this is an evangelical Christian ministry that preaches radical left-wing politics. During the 1980s, it championed communist revolution in Central America and chastised U.S. policymakers for their tendency to assume the very worst about their Soviet counterparts. More recently, Sojourners has taken up the cause of environmental activism, opposed welfare reform as a mean-spirited Republican agenda, and mounted a defense of affirmative action. So they were both, the founder of Sojourners is Jim Wallace, and both Jim and Doug were asked about receiving funds from Soros, and Jim actually denied it, but later changed his mind, his statement, and came back and, you know, affirmed that, and or they changed, like Doug Padgett, when he was asked, he just changed the subject completely and went to a different subject. So the bus tour and this so-called Christian political activity is really aimed at doing Christian works. If they're really aimed at that, why would they want to hide who's funding them? That's a good question. So the American Association of Evangelicals spokesperson Kelly Monroe Kohlberg said that anti-American globalists like Soros are funding a growth industry of paid anarchists and political activists to divide and weaken America, including the church. So Sojourners actually gives money to Planned Parenthood. That should tell you, that should be a red flag right there. You know, a warning bell in your head. Ding, ding, ding. You know, they, you know, Planned Parenthood is the largest provider of abortions in America. And if you know the history of Planned Parenthood, started by Margaret Sanger, who was, she started it because she wanted to rid the world of what you call bad people. She was racist, extremely racist, okay? So that's why you see a lot of Planned Parenthood clinics in the inner cities, okay? So that's abortion. So I did a live video last night about the vote going on today in the Senate, and they're voting today on a bill called the Born Alive Protection Act that protects babies and gives them the right to medical care if they're born and survived an abortion. And they're also doing the Pain Capable Bill that says that we shouldn't do abortions after at least after 20 weeks because babies can feel pain. We know scientifically they could even feel pain before that. But it, right now the bill says 20 weeks. And so they're voting on that today. And it's amazing to me that we have to even vote that that should be a no-brainer. It should be everyone voting for these bills. But unfortunately in the House, we're going to have, I mean, in the Senate, we're going to have opposition from the Democrat side. So that's just where we are standing on that issue. So my whole point is evangelicals, so-called evangelicals like Padgett and Wallace, are out there trying to push their radical socialist agenda on Christians, then I will do my part and do my best to bring you truth about America and what will happen if we lose, you know, if Trump doesn't win the 2020 election, if the election goes to the Democrats. We've already seen what they do in the House. And so if we don't take back the House and don't keep the Senate and we don't keep President Trump, don't reelect him, there's going to be serious consequences. And I just try to lay that out. And I know it's, you can hate me or like me. That's okay. I'm okay with that. If you want, you know, I would like to have a civil conversation. I would love to have conversations with people, but it's really hard nowadays because, if you don't believe like they do on the left, if you don't believe their agenda, then their reaction to that is to call you a name, whether it was be racist, homophobic, misogynist, I don't know all the names they've come up with. It's crazy. Instead of having a conversation about the policy, they just attack you, the person. And we can't do that. And we've seen in Virginia how when 20, it was at least 25,000 people, maybe more, showed up to stand up for their Second Amendment rights. And everyone came with a gun. And if you watched it at all, you know, they're always saying how conservatives are scary, bad people. They want to, you know, push granny off a cliff or take away kids' food or health care. And these people showed up and they were all beforehand. The governor brought the National Guard. He put a fence around the Capitol. For Pete's sake, they actually said a wall was good for once. He put a fence around the Capitol. And if you came inside the fence, you had to disarm. Who was going to? Not very many people did that. I mean, there was some that did that. But they knew there was thousands of us out of them outside that were armed. So the point being is 25,000 people or more showed up armed from all walks of life, from all places. They were very considerate. They were civil with each other. There was no hate going on. In fact, when they left it cleaner than when they got there. And that's how I was always taught. You know, if you come somewhere and you mess something up, you clean it up and leave it the way, even cleaner than when you arrived. And that's what they did. They were very civil towards everyone. They were thanking the police officers that were there. Do you really honestly think that would have happened if these anarchist groups and the ones that are funded by George Soros to create chaos, you know, Antifa, you know, they come with their weapons and masks and they cause chaos. And even Lance Wallnau, the day of the election, this is Antifa. They set his limo on fire. I mean, this is, they loot, they destroy, they leave a mess. But when 25,000 armed citizens come to stand for their rights, they were peaceful and not one bad thing happened. And so they try to make, you know, this is the reality of what good, upstanding citizens are for, okay, and what we're against. So, you know, we have to, I'm trying to show you what we're up against in the elections. And so I know I'm rambling a little bit, but it was just, there's a lot to inform people on if you don't watch the news because it can be so angering. So I do that and I hope to bring you uplifting stuff, but also a kind of warning stuff. A warning to you that if we don't do our duty and vote for the right people, we're going to be in a world of hurt. So I hope you'll continue to follow me. I'm going to address more important issues this week as we head into our primary election because the Democrats will be picking a nominee and it's going to be very important of who that's going to be. And there's going to be completely different paths for the future of America. And we have to know what those pathways are. And obviously we know what Trump's path will be. Everything pro-America, pro-Constitution, pro-life, pro-family, all of that. So there are stark differences. So I hope you'll follow me at www.straighttalkwithmj.net and on my Facebook page, Straight Talk with MJ. Remember those two words, Straight Talk is one word. And find me on that. And thank you, thank you, thank you. And God bless.